This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman, welcoming you to the 9th of April, Thursday edition of Northland Views here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today we have news from the WilliamsNews.com website, news of Williams and the Grand Canyon. Let's start with these headlines. Williams High School principal named Arizona FFA Administrator of the Year. Kaibab National Forest campgrounds and day-use sites reopen in May, and appeals court blocks Republicans' bid to dismantle Grand Canyon National Monument. Calvin Shoemaker writes our first headline, Williams High School principal named Arizona FFA Administrator of the Year. From the 7th of April, Williams. Williams High School principal Dr. Connie Hargis was recently named the 2026 Arizona FFA Future Farmers of America Administrator of the Year. Nominated by the school's FFA advisors, Mr. Kevin English and Mrs. Kirsten Ironside, Hargis was chosen by the state's FFA officers from a wide pool of nominees from around the state. Hargis was notified of the award while observing Ironside's Ag Science class when English came in to make the announcement. It was quite the shock to me, but definitely an honor, Hargis said. English, a finalist for Coconino County Teacher of the Year, said Principal Hargis was nominated because she's been a constant supporter of the school's FFA chapter since its inception 4 years ago and has helped roll out an agriculture mechanics course and makes it evident that she cares like nobody else. It's really hard to win that award, English said. The fact that they're recognizing that a rural school and a rural school administration is doing a great job is a big kudos to Dr. Hargis. Williams Jr., Richard Gonzalez, is in his second year as chapter president, following in the footsteps of his older brother Raymond, who helped get the program started with a livestock evaluation team. Now the program has grown from a handful of students to about 30 kids seizing the opportunity to pursue professional development in a variety of agricultural disciplines. Whenever kids thought about the FFA, all they thought about was pigs and cows, Gonzalez said. Now they think about the other stuff, like building engines, construction, the wildlife part of it, agriculture sales, competition, and veterinary science. Hargis pointed to chapter leadership as being the main driver of the program's success, saying, Gonzalez is guiding the future of Williams FFA and that the advisors go above and beyond. In February, FFA students from Williams traveled to Tucson for the Arizona FFA Spring Field Day, where they competed in career development events in subjects like agricultural sales and service, meat science, poultry science, and wildlife management. It was the first time in school history that a Williams FFA jacket made the winter stage at the event. Bo Ironside placed 9th in the Green Hand Agricultural Mechanics Tool Identification Contest and the Green Hand Agricultural Mechanics Team. Bo Ironside, Aiden McCarron, and Gage Baldwin, and Joe Herrera took 3rd in the state. Gonzalez says the leadership skills he's learned from FFA are preparing him up for his dream of becoming a wildlife biologist. I've learned so much from it, Gonzalez said. I'm confident I can go up to anybody in the world and have a conversation or go give a speech without having any fear because of what this has taught me. For Hargis, heading up the small rural school offers a unique chance to get to know the students, something she doesn't take for granted. I've had this honor in this small school to watch these kids so close. I get to walk down the hall and have a conversation with these kids, and they always impress me, Hargis said. It's really quite something to be a part of. Williams High School will be hosting the Arizona FFA Northern District Leadership Event on April 24th and is looking for members of the local community who are willing to be volunteer judges. Expertise is not required. And that was Williams High School principal named Arizona FFA Administrator of the Year. Next, from the 7th of April, we have Kaibab National Forest campgrounds and day-use sites reopen in May. Williams. This May, campgrounds and day-use sites across the Kaibab National Forest will reopen for the 2026 season. fee rates remain the same as last year and help to maintain and update the forest's concession-operated campgrounds. Recreation Resource Management of America will reopen concession-run recreation sites on the forest, including Dogtown Lake, Kaibab Lake, and Whitehorse Lake campgrounds, and the Cataract Lake day use area near the city of Williams and the Jacob Lake and DeMott campgrounds north of the Grand Canyon near the town of Fredonia. The Forest Service maintained Tucson Montane Campground, located just outside Grand Canyon National Park, will also reopen in May. In 2025, fee dollars, including 100% of day use fees, were used to purchase and install new grills and tables to upgrade the boat ramp access at Cataract Lake, to upgrade water systems at all campgrounds, and for new signage and speed bumps. These and future projects, supported by fee revenues, are part of a nationwide effort to modernize recreation sites, increase access and safety, and enhance visitor experiences. Season dates and fees. Reservations are available now for stays beginning May 15th on recreation.gov for Dogtown, Kaibab, Whitehorse Lake, and DeMott campgrounds, Jacob Lake Recreation Area, and Tucson Montane Campground. Outside of the reservation season, the Tucson Montane Campground will be open for first-come, first-served camping May 1 through 15 and September 30 to October 31, 2026. The concessionaire may be open for camping earlier if weather and staffing allow, and if so, campsites would be available on a first-come, first-served basis. Whitehorse Lake Campground and, depending on demand, some loops at Kaibab Lake Campground will close earlier on October 15, 2026. Day use fees for Cataract, Dogtown, Kaibab, and Whitehorse will be assessed beginning May 1st. Cataract Lake day use area does not require reservations. The day use fee is $8 per vehicle per day. The Williams area residents can purchase an annual pass for $50, and non-residents can purchase for $100. Additional fee information is available online at www.fs.usda.gov/r03/kaibab/recreation/fee-areas-kaibab-2026-information. New this year, the pavilion at Kaibab Lake will also be available for reservation at recreation.gov. This change will help better manage vehicle parking and improve event planning. Pavilion reservations are available for $40 per day for up to 5 vehicles, 25 people. Additional vehicles would be subject to the day use fee. To coordinate large special events, contact Recreation Resource Management at 928-537-8888. There is no charge for walk-in visitors who do not use the day use site facilities or parking lots. The Forest does not charge fees outside of the concessionaire's operating season, which will end October the 31st for most concession-operated campgrounds on the Kaibab National Forest. It's important to note that camping and day use fees are separate from state fishing licenses required by the Arizona Game and Fish Department. The public can purchase fishing license at www.azgfd.gov, Arizona Game and Fish Department.gov. A wealth of information about recreation, including information about the concession-operated sites, is available on the Kaibab National Forest website, and that's at www.fs.usda.gov/r03/kaibab. Visitors should monitor the alerts for current conditions or closures. This information was provided by the Kaibab National Forest for Kaibab National Forest campgrounds and day-use sites reopen in May. Our next article is from the Arizona Mirror by Caitlin Sievers. Appeals Court blocks Republicans' bid to dismantle Grand Canyon National Monument. This is from the 7th of April. Arizona's legislative leaders can't dismantle a new national monument near the Grand Canyon that they claimed would harm both state and local governments. A federal appeals court ruled on April 1st. In the memorandum ruling, a three-judge panel in the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals unanimously agreed with a lower court ruling made more than a year ago. Both courts ruled that Republican legislative leaders lack standing to bring the lawsuit because all of the harms they claimed the monument would cause were speculative. Republicans in the Arizona legislature have criticized the creation of the Baja Nuevo Itah Kukveni ancestral footprints of the Grand Canyon National Monument since President Joe Biden designated it in 2023. That designation effectively barred mining on the roughly 1 million acres of land near Grand Canyon National Park to make up the monument. Mining on the land within the monument is already barred until at least 2032, but the new designation will ban it indefinitely. Senate President Warren Peterson and former House Speaker Ben Thoma, both Republicans, filed a lawsuit in 2024 asking the court to declare the creation of the monument unlawful and to set aside its designation. Joining in the suit were State Treasurer Kimberly Yee, who is also a Republican, Mojave County, Colorado City, and the town of Fredonia. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays, alongside Governor Katie Hobbs, both Democrats, intervened in the lawsuit to argue for the preservation of the monument. Mays celebrated the win. Today's ruling is victory for the people of Arizona and for the indigenous communities whose ancestral homelands are protected by this monument, Mays said in a statement. The court rejected every argument Senate President Warren Peterson, Speaker of the House, Steve Montenegro, Treasurer Kimberly Yee put forward. I'm proud to have stood up to defend these sacred and important lands. Biden created the monument in response to advocacy from the Native American communities whose ancestral homelands are located in and near the Grand Canyon and who still rely on the canyon for natural and cultural resources that are significant and sacred to their communities. In the unsigned memorandum, Judges Consuelo Callahan, John Owens, and Michelle Friedland wrote that the Arizona legislature couldn't base its arguments for dismantling the monument on its fears of hypothetical future harm. Callahan was appointed to the Ninth Circuit by President George W. Bush, while Owens and Friedland were appointed by President Barack Obama. Sad to see the Ninth Circuit kick the can down the road, Peterson said in a statement to the Arizona Mirror. Peterson said he was disappointed that the court decided the challenge came too soon and failed to address the legislature's claim that Biden lacked the authority to create the monument in the first place. Arizona families should not have to wait years while our land and economic opportunities remain locked up, he said. We will continue fighting to protect Arizona's economy, jobs, and state sovereignty from this expansive federal land lockup, including through any available avenues at the federal level. We're actively working with the Trump administration to undo this illegal land grab. In the challenge, the Arizona legislature argued that the Antiquities Act of 1906, which Biden used to designate the monument, didn't actually give him the power to do so. Instead of addressing that claim, the courts ruled that none of the entities that brought the challenge could establish a concrete injury upon which they could base their case. Their alleged loss of future tax revenue depends on uranium prices being sufficiently high in 2032 or whenever the pre-existing protections expire, such that third-party companies would choose to begin mining, the appellate judges wrote. But it is speculative whether the right economic conditions and incentives for uranium mining will exist so far into the future. The courts agreed that claims from the government entities that the creation of the monument was losing them tax revenue on geothermal and mineral leasing were also speculative. Plaintiffs failed to allege that any entity has ever sought to engage in mineral or geothermal leasing, or that the monument land even contains those resources, the judges wrote. The Ninth Circuit found Colorado City's argument that the creation of the monument endangered its future water supply equally unconvincing. Colorado City claimed that because its water was supplied from an aquifer beneath the monument, the federal government might decide to restrict access to that water in the future. The judges wrote that Biden's proclamation doesn't alter existing water rights, and there is otherwise no reason to speculate that the federal government will reduce Colorado City's water supply as Colorado City fears. The Ninth Circuit also disagreed with the Arizona legislature's claim that creation of the monument strips it of its power to sell, lease, and set royalty rates for state land surrounded by the monument. The judges wrote that the legislature could continue to manage and dispose of state land as it sees fit. The court similarly shot down the Arizona legislature's claim that the monument designation harmed the state by forcing it to channel time and money to passing laws, holding hearings, and publicly commenting on issues caused by the monument. Plaintiff may not manufacture an injury simply by choosing to spend money, the Ninth Circuit wrote. The judges wrote that the legislature had failed to show that it would have suffered any harm if it hadn't passed laws, held hearings, or made public comments relating to the monument. The judges also dismissed the legislature's claim that it and other plaintiffs might lose money in the future due to increases in energy prices caused by the ban on uranium mining within the monument. Future energy prices depend on many unknown variables and the unfettered choices of innumerable third parties, the judges wrote. Any future economic harm from higher energy prices caused by the proclamation is accordingly far too speculative to support standing. The tribal nations with ancestral lands within the monument include the Havasupai Tribe, Hopi Tribe, Hualapai Tribe, Kaibab Band of Paiute Indians, Las Vegas Paiute Tribe, Moapa Band of Paiutes, Paiute Indian Tribe of Utah, Navajo Nation, San Juan Southern Paiute Tribe, Yavapai Apache Nation, Pueblo of Zuni, and the Colorado River Indian Tribes. And that's Appeals Court Blocks Republicans' Bid to Dismantle Grand Canyon National Monument. You're listening to Northland Views here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. You can listen to Northland Views either at a time of your choosing or as it streams by going to the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or by downloading the Sun Sounds of Arizona app. That's available for your iPhone or iPad from the Apple App Store or from the Google Play Store for your Android phone or tablet. And you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon dot echo or show. We'll turn now to an article from the Arizona Daily Sun by Sam McLaughlin from the 4th of April. El Rio taps experienced leader to oversee transition from North Country Healthcare to Elk Ridge. April 1st marked a major shift in the provision of healthcare in northern Arizona as El Rio Health, a Tucson-based community health provider, officially acquired most of the assets of the bankrupt North Country Healthcare, hired most of North Country's remaining employees, and assumed responsibility for delivering patient care at North Country's 12 remaining clinic locations, which have all been renamed Elk Ridge Community Health. The closing of the asset sale does not bring an end to current and former employees' attempts to recoup the losses of unanticipated medical bills they accrued after North Country quietly stopped paying its portion of a self-funded health insurance plan. But it does mark the end of one fraught chapter in the messy saga of the nonprofit's collapse and the beginning of another, hopefully brighter, chapter. On March 27th, El Rio announced the new on-site executive leader of the Elk Ridge Clinics, naming David Rogers, who will serve as an executive vice president of El Rio, with a focus entirely on Elk Ridge's operations. Unofficially, the Arizona Daily Sun understands that North Country CEO Ann Newland will not have any role with Elk Ridge or El Rio. No formal statement on the matter has been released by El Rio or North Country. Rogers spoke to the Daily Sun on March 30 about the future of Elk Ridge. Rogers, born in Eloy, has a bachelor's degree from Grand Canyon University and a master's in business administration with an emphasis on healthcare management from the University of Phoenix. He spent his entire career in healthcare administration, beginning at rural hospitals in New Mexico and concluding with a 20-year tenure as CEO of Sunset Community Health Center in Yuma, a federally qualified health center like El Rio and North Country, where he oversaw a fourfold increase in both revenue and employment. After about 2 years of what he called semi-retirement, Rogers has spent the last 5 weeks preparing to take the helm of Elk Ridge. It's a pleasure to be here to help El Rio operate these clinics in a manner that's going to sustain Elk Ridge Community Health for many, many years, he said. Though he readily acknowledged the challenges ahead, he also expressed confidence that financial stability for the clinics, and with that a secure work environment for providers and continuity of care for patients, can be achieved. It's realistic, it's doable, Rogers said, something we're going to work really hard to accomplish. The weeks and months ahead. Rogers said the primary goal of everyone involved in the transition is to avoid major disruptions in the continuity of patient care. We recognize they need it for survival and they need it for quality of life, he said. As part of the process of bankruptcy, North Country shuttered its Bullhead City location. No additional closures are planned. That leaves 12 clinics in 10 communities: Flagstaff, Grand Canyon, Holbrook, Kingman, Lake Havasu City, Payson, Round Valley, Springerville, Sholow, Williams, and Winslow. The first week will bring some minor disruptions as all Elk Ridge clinics transition to a new digital records management system. According to Rogers, the change will provide greater efficiency and interoperability in the long run and should be completed relatively quickly. By Monday, April 6, the clinic should be off and running. One area of operations will take longer to reestablish. It will take about 3 to 4 weeks before all components of pharmacy operations are back to normal, according to Rogers. Elk Ridge's goal is to have the full complement of inventory on the shelves at all three pharmacies located in the Flagstaff, Kingman, and Grand Canyon clinics by that time. We do need the patience of the community, Rogers said. We need patients to understand there's going to be some disruption with that part of it. It will also take a few months for Elk Ridge to complete its licensure under the federal 340B drug pricing program, which allows qualified organizations to buy certain outpatient medications at reduced costs from the manufacturers. That won't affect patients immediately or directly, but the cost savings available through that program are important for the organization's long-term financial health. Although El Rio offered employment to about 99% of the North Country employees who had endured the bankruptcy process, Rogers admitted that departures ahead of the sale have impacted staffing. He did not have specific numbers available. The reality is there have been a lot of employees that have left the previous organization, he said. We're beginning the operation with bare bones, minimal staffing levels for the most part. Where there's a need to replace critical positions, those will happen immediately, he added. He also said patients will not see any reduction in services or cuts to existing programs as a result of the transition. Everything that currently goes on in the Elk Ridge clinics will continue to provide those services, Rogers said. Our goal and desire is not to get rid of services, it's to expand and grow services, improve the access to those services. There will be some consolidation of background organizational functions. Departments such as compliance and risk management, billing and finance, and human resources will, for the most part, be integrated with El Rio's existing operations and centralized in Tucson. Rogers believes that within less than a year, all 12 Elk Ridge clinics will be operating as well-oiled machines. Fortunately, the assets that we're purchasing through this acquisition will give us a lot to work with right up front, he said. It's just a matter of stabilizing the environment, and we'll do that in a relatively short period of time. Long-term goals. Stabilizing the environment, as Rogers put it, will be the short-term goal. Looking further ahead, he spoke of the need to evaluate and reevaluate all components of clinic operations, from hours to staffing to resources and technology, in order to ensure that the organization is meeting community needs and also functioning efficiently. Will there be challenges? Absolutely, he said. There'll be staffing challenges. There'll be challenges on the financial side as we work with Medicaid and Medicare and commercial payers and managed care organizations in order to demand better reimbursement rates. Federally qualified health centers generally serve a patient population that's both low resource and high complexity, Rogers said. That means administrators need to work hard with our eligibility programs, working with the patients to qualify them for third-party resources, he explained, and also remain cognizant of the burden on clinicians. Communicate, communicate, communicate. Show appreciation and make sure the panel sizes for these providers are appropriate, that they're not overloaded with too many patients, Rogers said. Make sure the minimum requirements of production and productivity and the number of patients they see is appropriate, given the complexities of healthcare world that we currently live in. It's not easy. It's extremely difficult for the providers. Recruiting and retaining clinicians and support staff will be essential to the quality of patient care and overall stability of the organization. Multiple former employees of North Country Healthcare previously told the Daily Sun that the churn of providers was exhausting and demoralizing. Rogers stressed the importance of open communications with providers, including a lot of listening, along with competitive compensation and benefits. He also emphasized the value of residency programs and said, we want to be in a position to channel many of these residents and get them to stay at Elk Ridge sites once they complete their residency programs. Eventually, he believes, there could be opportunities for Elk Ridge to expand its offerings beyond current levels. Dental services and behavioral and health care are both areas of unmet or underserved need in much of the state. We have opportunities to grow and build those programs and provide more care in those areas, Rogers said. For the moment, though, the focus will be on the immediate transition of employees and services, a long-awaited milestone after months of uncertainty for staff and patients alike. Well, unfortunately, we have run out of time on this Thursday edition of Northland Views for El Rio taps experienced leader to oversee transition from North Country Healthcare to Elk Ridge. This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. I'd like to thank you for joining me for Northland Views and remind you, you can listen to Northland Views and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming streaming on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, where you can select individual programs or listen to SunSound as it streams, just as you can on your Amazon Dot, Echo, or Show.